As we get started on this series, we're going to be spending a lot of time in John. In your bulletin, well, actually not in your bulletin, I did hand out some already. They're in the very back. We have the questions that we'll be going through on this Wednesday night. So if you're part of the Wednesday night thing and you don't have the questions, be sure to pick those up. We've got a lot of good discussion that we're going to be having in the weeks to come. So go ahead and stand as I read this morning. John chapter 1, beginning in verse 1 through 14. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, but the darkness has not understood it. There came a man who was sent from God. His name was John. He came as a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all men might believe. He himself was not the light. He came only as a witness to the light. The true light that gives light to every man was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who received him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision or a husband's will, but born of God. The Word of God became the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. The Word of the Lord this morning. Have a seat. Hello, my name is Ryan. I am your pastor, and I am a YouTube addict. My relationship with YouTube started off rather innocently. I wanted to learn how to solve a Rubik's Cube, and with the help of YouTube, I learned how to do it. A few years ago, I had a problem with my plasma TV, and I was able to get online and figure out what the problem was, figure out what part I needed to order, and through that process, I was able to save quite a bit of money and get some extra screws. I took off about 100 screws off the back of the TV, and by the time I put it all back together, I had 5 left. I don't know where they go, but in the process of moving that TV here, it stayed together, so I had the important screws in place. One of the things that happens when you spend a lot of time on YouTube watching videos is that it starts to keep track of what you've watched already, and then it offers up suggestions on other videos that you might be interested in watching as well. Over the past few weeks, a new genre of YouTube videos has made its way onto my suggestion list. They are called fail videos. Fail videos are when someone attempts to do something, but they fail, and most times they fail in dramatic fashion. It's not that a girl fails in her attempt to do a handstand in the house. It's that she fails in her attempt to do a handstand in the house and knocks over a candle on the coffee table and starts the carpet on fire. That kind of a fail. It's not that a driver passes by a bunch of vehicles in busy traffic using the wrong lane. It's that a driver passes a bunch of vehicles using the wrong lane, and one of the cars being passed just happens to be a police officer who immediately pulls right out and pulls them over. There are all kinds of fails that are caught on video today's day and age, since everybody has a camera available and they can record all sorts of things. And most of the time it's entertaining, but there are times also when it's scary. When you have drivers that are driving recklessly and putting themselves and others in danger. They thought they could do something and be safe about it, but they were wrong. One of the things that I think about when I watch those kinds of videos is this. If they knew how badly things were going to turn out before they did it, would they have chosen, would they do things differently? If they had the ability to know the outcome of their decision in advance, would they choose something less dangerous and destructive? This morning, we're going to start a new series as we journey through the book of John. And the book of John starts where none of the other gospels really start. The gospel of John starts in the beginning. Matthew starts with a genealogy that starts from Abraham and works its way to Jesus. Mark starts with John the Baptist as a voice in the wilderness. And Luke starts with the announcement of the birth of John the Baptist. But John starts off by alluding to the very words that we read in Genesis. In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. How you start a book is extremely important. It sets the trajectory of the path you're going to travel down. And when it comes to reading the book of John, and when it comes to following the steps of Jesus, it is important that we follow the steps of Jesus from creation to the cross, and not just the cradle to the cross. And what John does here in his opening statement in this book is he anchors Jesus to the beginning of all things, the creation of the heavens and the earth. Prior to the creation of the world, and he is co-eternal with the Father. Saying that the Son of God is co-eternal with God the Father is a huge statement. I may make controversial statements from time and again, but my controversial statements pale in comparison to the biblical claim that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, co-eternal with the Father. The relational claims that Jesus is going to be making about himself in this book we're about to read, and about his relational claim with God, did more than just stir the pot. It stirred the hornet's nest. And we'll see that as we go through this book. But this morning we're going to camp out where this book starts, and it's in the beginning, because it raises some very important questions and issues. Or at least there are questions and issues that I feel are important, and I hope there are things that are interesting for you as well. If I were to hand out a sheet of paper that has dots scattered all over the page and asked you to connect those dots and then ask you to turn those sheets of paper back in, my guess is that each and every one of you would fill out and connect those dots differently than everyone else. Unless those dots made some sort of an easily recognizable shape, like a square or a circle, chances are people would do the same thing then. But if you had random dots all over a page, you would connect them in very different ways. One of the challenges when it comes to a book like this, and I'm talking about all of Scripture, not just the book of John, one of the challenges about it is the fact that people have read through the very same pages of the same book, but have come to different conclusions or connected the dots in different ways. For some of us, it's been a very long time since doing a book report. For some of us, it has been a very, very long time since doing a book report. When people write a book report, there may be things that come across as very important to one reader that isn't really important to another. And sometimes one reader in their book report will leave out certain things that another person would include. What I'm going to be sharing this morning is a collection of thoughts and questions that have stood out to me as I've spent time, various times, in this book. This is one of the first books that I memorized as a quizzer, and then 8 years ago they went over it again. And so this is another journey as I go through at a different stage in my life. Through Christ, all things were made. This is an important statement. Jesus was a part of the creation of the world where he would later walk. Jesus was the one who ultimately created his mother Mary. That's a funny thought. Maybe you've heard a parent tell their child, "I brought you into this world and I can take you out of it." Could Mary have ever said such a thing to Jesus? Jesus could have easily responded, "This world that you brought me into, I created it out of nothing." End of argument. Jesus created the tree that would later be made into a cross and the metal that would be hammered and fashioned into nails. That to me is a mind-blowing thing to consider. Jesus made the stone that would be rolled in front of the entrance to his temporary tomb. Jesus created everything. Among the things that Jesus also created was a tree in the middle of a garden, a tree with fruit that was off limits. Earlier, when I was talking about fails, I asked the question about whether or not people would have made a different decision had they known the destructive consequences that would follow from their decision. When it comes to a fail that has major consequences, the decision that Adam and Eve made takes first place in the history of mankind. Imagine how short this book would be if it were not for the world-altering fail that happened with Adam and Eve. God created everything, everything was good, and everything was good for forever. What would be left would be a chapter about creation, a chapter about Adam and Eve, and a chapter about their flourishing in the world that God had created, and a chapter about an ongoing eternal relationship with God, all because sin was eliminated from the picture. Imagine what a yearly reading plan would look like for the Bible. Some of you maybe have started that this week, where you're reading through and you have to read certain chapters from certain books of the Bible, and so you have to read so much every day. If the Bible did not have the issue of the sin that came into it, the Bible would be a lot shorter for sure. So imagine what kind of a reading plan you'd have for that. Today we're going to read half of verse 1, and don't go ahead. You can read the other half for tomorrow. This book would be a lot shorter without the entrance of sin, and that raises an important question. Why is God with us? If Adam and Eve had not sinned in the garden, would Jesus have ever been born into this world? If this world had not become the sort of dark world that we read about in the introduction to this gospel, would the light of the world ever needed to come into it? I asked those last two questions knowing right off the bat that there is an overwhelming tendency to answer with a no. The tendency is to say that the reason Jesus came had everything to do with our sin, so if there were no sin, then Jesus would have no reason to come and be God with us. Here's one problem I see with that logic. It makes God reactive to the problem of sin. The coming of Jesus becomes reactionary to the arrival of sin. Sin comes, so now Jesus has to as well. Jesus is here as a response to sin being here, and it makes Jesus a backup plan. We're all very familiar with backup plans. We know that things happen all the time that happen even though we don't want them to, we don't intend them to, we didn't plan for them. At work, we have fire extinguishers and fire alarms all over the place, not because we plan on having a fire, but because if we ever were to have a fire, we would be ready. Not too long ago, a topographical survey of the state of Illinois was performed, and they discovered a grand total of 5 hills in the entire state. And if you happen to park on any one of those 5 hills in Illinois, you can use your emergency brake. In the event that your normal brakes go out, you have backup brakes to keep your vehicle safe. And before you ask me, technically there are a lot more hills in Illinois, but most of them were created by moles, so they were not included in the tally. It's possible to connect the dots of Scripture in such a way that God failed and God needed a backup plan. God created everything and said it was all perfect, but as soon as God's back was turned, his perfect creation was destroyed by a pair of hungry human beings and a snake. What kind of a perfect creation can be so easily ruined? If God's desire was to avoid a sin problem, he could have taken care of that in advance by not including this tree, or by not making the rule involving the tree. It's also possible to connect the dots in such a way as to make the law given to Moses a colossal failure as well. If the law was intended to lead to right living, then it fell very, very short when it came to the life of Israel. By the time Jesus arrives, the law was being used and abused by those in religious authority, and God's house had become a den of robbers. The law and the temple failed to take care of sin. The logic that Jesus is here solely because of sin makes it where Jesus isn't God with us because God wanted to be with us. God is with us because Adam and Eve failed. And God is with us because the law of Moses failed. And now Jesus is coming in like a pinch hitter in the bottom of the 9th inning with 2 outs and trying to snatch a victory from the jaws of defeat. God is with us as a part of a backup plan because the primary plan and the secondary plan failed. But what if God's desire from the beginning was to be God with us? What if, rain or shine, sin or no sin, God's plan was to be with us from the very moment his voice pierced through the silence and the darkness and created heaven and earth and everything in them? Even if there wasn't the problem of sin, and even if all of creation was in a right relationship with Creator, the very act of God entering into creation itself is a relationship-altering act. God entered into creation not because of what we did, but because of who God is. And the creator of mankind is a God who has always desired to be in an intimate relationship with mankind. The light of the world. This introductory passage in John also gives us a description of the world in which Jesus enters. And the world he enters is dark. This world doesn't understand the light. The light shines in the darkness, but the darkness does not understand it. In verse 5. The dark world doesn't recognize its creator. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. In verse 10, not being recognized by someone who should recognize you is one of the toughest things to deal with. If you've ever known someone going through the stages of dementia or Alzheimer's, or known someone with a loved one going through it, it's extremely difficult. Years ago, my mother went back home to see a bunch of family members, but she wanted to see one family member in particular in North Carolina. It was one of her favorite aunts. She had 2 aunts that she loved dearly, and the one was getting along in years and health was declining, and so she wanted to be able to see her and spend time with her. However, when she went to go do this visit, her aunt didn't recognize her because of, I don't know if it was Alzheimer's or dementia, but she didn't actually recognize my mom. However, as she talked and spent time with her aunt would go off on these tangents where she'd talk about her wonderful niece that lived in Illinois. And she'd just go, oh yeah, tell me more about this wonderful niece you have in Illinois. I just love hearing that story. And her aunt would say, I wish you would meet her. She's really wonderful. And Laura's like, my mom was like, yes, that's I bet she is. The first thing, Jesus enters into a world. Jesus enters into a world that he created and steps into the midst of people that he knit together in their mother's wombs. And the response of that world and those people to Jesus is, who are you? We don't recognize you. Creation no longer knows what their creator looks like. The first thing that you probably do when it's nighttime and you enter your home is turn on the lights. That's why the light switches are always really close to the entryway. You want to be able to see the entire room before you go walking through it, especially if you have kids. Who knows what you might step into or run over or bump into if your child has created some sort of a disaster area on their way out the door. Last night, as I sat and typed this in the kitchen area, I sat where I could see, and I could see the microwave, I could see the oven, I could see the sink, the coffee maker, and I could see the Christmas tree still sitting up in the neighboring room. Because of the light, I could see all sorts of things. But there's something else that could be seen in the light as well, and that was me. I could see all of those things, and if those things had eyes of their own, they could see me in return. As it was, the only thing that saw me last night as I looked around and typed were my two cats. Laura had already went to bed. She was tired. My cats just lay there nearby, just watching me, wondering when I'm going to be going to bed. What is the significance of Jesus being the light of the world? While it is true that Jesus being the light of the world makes it easier for people to see the sin and the brokenness around them, one of the other things that happens is that we have the ability to see Jesus. But seeing Jesus is not the same as knowing who he is. And when Jesus entered into the world did not recognize him. This is why it seems to me that Jesus came to do so much more than just pay the price for our sin. If the primary mission of Jesus was to pay the price for sin, then the gospel accounts that we have in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John would be a lot smaller as well. What good does making a path to God the Father possible do in a world that doesn't even know who God the Father is and doesn't recognize the Son of God either? Before Jesus gets to the cross, there is a very real need for Jesus to reveal to the world what God the Father is like. And that's what we're going to see as we work our way through John over these next few months. Jesus is going to show us the Father. Later on in chapter 14, we have a conversation that takes place between Philip and Jesus. Philip asks Jesus, Lord, show us the Father, and that will be enough for us. And the response of Jesus is this, don't you know me? Even after I've spent so much time with you, I have shown you the Father. The Father is in me, and I am in the Father. The life of Jesus is intended to show us the Father who lives in Jesus. Jesus is in the Father, and the Father is in him. Jesus came to be with us so that we could be with the Father. This morning, we're going to be partaking in communion together. This is one of those God with us sort of things. Jesus offers himself up for us. Jesus wants to live in us and through us, and his sacrifice shows us more about the Father as well. It shows us the depth of God's desire to be with us. God desired to be with us before the creation of the world, and not even our sin and rebellion changed his mind. I'm going to read real quick from Colossians. This is one of the letters Paul wrote, and it talks about the supremacy of Christ and all of creation. Colossians chapter 1. And beginning in verse 15, Colossians 1:15, he is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things were created by him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning of the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have the supremacy. For God was pleased to have all the fullness of God, all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. Once you were alienated from God and were enemies in your minds because of your evil behavior, but now he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death to present you holy in his sight, without blemish and free from accusation. So what we celebrate this morning is we're going to be taking communion in a little bit is the fact that God became flesh. to reconcile us back to the Father who's desired to be with us. God's desire is to be with you, and this table that we're going to be partaking at shows us how far God was willing to go to do it. There is nothing that can separate us from the love of God, the love of God the Father, revealed to us through Christ the Son. And the invitation this morning is for you and I to come and be with him. And if the desire of your heart this morning is to be with the one who, if the desire of your heart is to come and be with the one who desired to be with you since the beginning and who desires to be with you for all of eternity, please come and join me this morning as we take communion together.